I'd love to talk about Roonham, if I may. So first of all, when did you first come to Greenham?
My first experience was the 30,000 women encircling the base, the Embrace the Base protest. Yeah, cool. That was amazing.
So I know that that was kind of first experience for a few women there. So how did you hear about Embrace the Base?
Well, I used to work at a women's centre in North Paddington. Basically, when I was at uni, back in 19... really long time, when bloody hell was it? 1978, I was looking for a placement and I got a placement in a women's centre, in a community centre in North Paddington, and then a group of women got together and decided to get a women's centre. And we managed to get funding and made a women's centre. And so obviously people would find out bits of stuff on the airwaves, you know, and would come back. So it was through contacts there. And a group of four of us got really involved from that.
So did you go all together, your group of four?
Yeah, quite often. And quite often a bigger group as well. I mean, it was sometimes someone would hire a van and we'd all just kind of go down for the weekend. But there were four of us who were a bit of a group. There's Christine and Jeannie and Jill and I. And we would often go together when we could. And also, like, Christine had kids as well and I had kids. So we had to kind of juggle stuff and supportive partners, which was kind of helpful.
I feel like that's a prerequisite for anyone like leaving the home for kind of the
weekend. If you've got children, you need to have someone to take care of them, and so that was important. But I think it was also important for my kids that I was doing it too. I mean, from them, that they know now that I did that. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's a part of their background.
How old were they then?
Laura was 5 and Jo was 11.
Okay.
Yeah, so Jo was very aware of it all, which was really nice, and Laura was just like 5.
Did you bring the children to Greenham?
They'd go down. Sometimes we'd go down, like my husband would drive us, my ex would drive us down there, and we'd take a box of food for the women who lived there and stuff, and then they'd visit, and then they'd leave me there for the weekend.
Cool.
So that happened a few times. So yeah, they got a taste of it, a flavour of it.
Because something that, when I was looking into Greenham, something that struck me was the children kind of being there at the base. And maybe it's a silly question, but how did you kind of explain what was going on to like a 5-year-old? You know, how do you kind of explain that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think she really understood it at all. I mean, mummy's going down because there's some people, some not very nice people have got some things we want to get rid of. I mean, it was much more on that level, you know. Whereas Joe at 11, he was a bit like... I mean, he understood about it a lot more. I mean, obviously not totally at 11, but I mean, he understood that it was to do with American missiles. It was about not wanting big weapons on our land or anywhere, basically.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the whole world. Yeah. So he kind of got it, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, it's lovely because when I had my 50th birthday, my daughter, 60th birthday, my daughter got people to write stuff in a book, got a book printed. And what he wrote about was the fact that I had done things like Greenham and taken him on marches when he was little was this massive inspiration to him. And he was really, really proud of that, which was just lovely. It made me cry.
Yeah, I bet it did.
Yeah, it was really nice. But I couldn't have personally had my kids there at the camp. It was too kind of wild, you know, never knew when the police were going to arrive and kind of remove the things you were sleeping in, so I wouldn't have felt that it was safe for them to be there.
Yeah. So when you first arrived for Embrace the Base, was it you as in your group of four?
Quite a few of us went. I can't exactly remember how. I was thinking about this. Who went? I think that was one of the times when we had a minibus.
Oh, nice.
Quite a lot of us went because... I think we had quite a few go down that day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how many, but lots.
What was your kind of expectation, I suppose, kind of driving in this minibus, if you were in a minibus to Greenham? Like, what did you kind of think about it before you got there?
Massively excited that it was happening and just really, really wanting to be part of it. And this huge anticipation that you can make a difference. But then also, you know, will we get enough women to hold hands around this massive thing, you know? Because I remember looking at a map and thinking, good God, that's huge. So would we get enough people? But mostly just real excitement to be going there together as a group of women, to join all these women to do something really important. And it just felt hugely celebratory. You know, a lot of singing, a lot of, oh, I don't know. Yeah, it just felt hugely celebratory. We can do this. We can make a difference. And the fact that it was woman only was really important because, you know, guns and stuff, they're all long and pointy like men. That sounds ridiculous. You know, war is a very masculine thing on the whole. I know we have women soldiers now and it's different, but it does, to me, it still's got a very masculine energy. And the female energy of Greenham was so important that women, you know, we're nurturing all those kinds of things. We're also bloody strong and we can fight back in ways that are peaceful and different and innovative. And that was something that I got every time I went to Greenham, that there were these amazing things you could do that weren't stereotypical protest, but we could be creative. And whoever, I don't know who had the idea for the Embrace the Base, I don't know who it was, but it was just, you know, I love that woman. Yeah. All those women, whoever they were.
Yeah, and you're right, it is very creative, and yeah. I feel like it was such a creative space at Greenham.
Oh, it really was. Yeah. Really was. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. So, when you first got there, I mean, how was it organised?
I have absolutely no idea. We just pitched up and stood around a fence and held hands and sang songs.
Yeah. Did you just, did you have to kind of talk to people there who'd been there for a while?
No, just arrived.
You just arrived.
Just pitched up and did it. And everyone was like, hi. And
it just happened.
Just welcoming and lovely and inclusive. And
how long were you around the base for?
I don't remember. Really don't remember. I mean, it feels like hours and hours just because so much happened in my head, do you know what I mean? About, you know, just really kind of getting this whole kind of inclusive thing and the joy of it and the power of it. And just that we can make a difference. It was really, you know, I think on that day I really thought, yeah, we can get rid of these bloody missiles. We don't have to have these here. We can do this. And that's not going to stop nuclear war, but it's going to stop something. You know, it's going to... Yeah, so I kind of had a real belief that day that we could do it.
Yeah. Had you been involved in protesting before? Have you been involved in kind of peace activism before? Was this your first time?
I mean, I'm going on marches, like big CND marches and stuff like that. I mean, you know, still pitch up on every big march. Yeah. It's just like, why is what I do? Yeah. But so, yeah, but not particularly, because my focus, I mean, children, and I was working in the women's centre. So the women's centre was very much a focus for local women. When we worked with the women's refuge, local women's refuge, we had a black women's group, and you know, and it was, and I was an antenatal teacher at that point, helping mothers with birth. So I was very involved in the women's movement on a very kind of personal, intimate level, I suppose, but also going on big things like the CND marches and stuff. Yeah,
so you're already kind of involved in that world.
Yeah, it wasn't the first time I'd done anything that was to do with protest, but it was certainly the first time I'd experienced such a powerful thing that was a woman-only protest. And you know, when it got to the point later on when I was prepared to get arrested and stuff, I mean, that was definitely a first.
Yeah. So what do you think it was about... maybe I should ask you this first, actually. Like, how long was the period that you were at Greenham? I know that you went mainly for weekends.
Yeah, I just go for weekends. And not every weekend, obviously, but when I could. I mean, all of us, the Paddington group, we would go when we could. Mm. And I'd say probably, I mean, maybe other weekend, we had every other weekend, we probably had some people going, but we couldn't all go at the same time. Yeah. So there could have been a month when I didn't go, or 6 weeks even, but then I might go 3 weekends in a row. It just depended on what was happening with the family, when I could go, when there was transport down there, because I can't drive.
So you had to kind of rely on someone.
Yeah, I'd always go with somebody else. Yeah. And it was just, it was nice having the group anyway. Yeah. And there was also, I mean, the wider sort of group of Greenham women in London would organise things like non-violent protest training, so you'd learn how to just not resist arrest, just how to lie floppy and be dragged around and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so,
I've seen the footage of that being used.
Yeah, so there's stuff like that going on too.
So when, let's go to that actually, let's go to those kind of actions where people are being kind of dragged around and you're kind of prepared to be arrested and things like that. I mean, what was the kind of journey for you to get to that point where you're going, actually, no, I could be arrested, that's fine. You know,
it took a while because it's really scary. Yeah. And I was just so full of admiration for the women who lived there and the women who were continually just allowing themselves to be arrested, to go to prison, to come back. You know, people would coat their fingertips with super glue so they couldn't get their fingerprints taken. and they were just incredibly brave. And some of them were quite scary also. but just incredibly brave woman who were just prepared to do this. And I did, I mean, it takes a while, but I mean, and there was so much. Okay, so the night we did the witches, that was hilarious. I think it was Halloween, and we all took witches' hats and, you know, cloaks and stuff like that, and we all hid in the woods. And I think all around the base there were women hiding in the woods, and I can't remember what time it was, but there was some prearranged signal, and we all came out of the woods and we were singing, "Who are the witches? Where do they come from? Maybe your great-great-grandmother was one. Witches are wise, wise women, they say. There's a lot of witch in every woman today." And then we got out the wire cutters. There's a picture from The Guardian of me standing on my friend Christine's shoulders cutting down the fence. And we basically cut it down and we rolled it up and sat on it and bounced on it. And all these poor little squaddies inside sort of going, "What do we do?" We're just going, "Hi, what are the witches?" So you do stuff like that. And so you get a bit more used to doing something bold, if you see what I mean. Because that was quite, you know, "Oh, they're going to shoot us." Of course they're not going to shoot us. But I mean, there's guys with guns there. And actually, one of my son's friends was one of those soldiers at Greenham. I mean, he had a great kind of reawakening, left the army, and just, you know, like he's a green activist now and all sorts of stuff. But he was there, and he remembers some of this stuff, which is a really kind of interesting point. Like, not knowing what the fuck are these women doing? Why are they all dressed as witches singing to us? So there was that. And then another thing I did that I think gave me quite a lot of courage was doing a die-in inside the base. That was really scary because some woman had got tickets to go into an air show. There was an air show there. So I think about 10, 12 of us, I'm not sure how many, we went into the air show, and then some of us lay down and got chalked around, and the others were doing the chalking. And there was all these like families coming to the air show, and all these American airmen and their families just like looking at us. And so you do a couple of things like that, and then you just get to the point, you think, "Oh, fuck it."
Yeah.
You know, what... You know, fuck it. All these women are getting arrested all the time. And, you know, I'm totally prepared to do that. And it was the four of us, actually. It was Jill, Jeannie, Christine and I decided that next time we're there at a big action, that we'll just get arrested. And we were sitting outside, I think it was either blue or turquoise. I think it was blue, because when we went back, we were thinking, finding out where the gates were. I'm pretty sure we were at Blue Gate when we got arrested. And it was one of these really big ones where you see the photos of, like, just loads of women all sitting there blocking the way in. And there was a guy with lots of, he just looked like some kind of general or some such shit in a car, and we all were just singing and refusing to move. And then I can remember the policemen sort of galloping towards us. I can remember this guy's like tie flying or something, and then we just all went floppy and got arrested. And it felt good. I mean, it you know, we're stuck in the back of a van with lots of other people, and one of them was a woman who put the super glue on her fingers and stuff. And end up in the nick at Reading or Newbury, wherever it was.
And so were you arrested like a few times or just the once?
Just the once.
That one time.
Just the one time, yeah.
So what happened when... Actually, I want to ask this, because you said something that was really interesting. It was like, we decided to be arrested.
Yeah.
And that just struck me as really, really funny.
Because everyone does. It's our turn next. You know, everyone's doing it. So
it's just that kind of decision that I think is so funny. And you know, what were the, how were the police in handling you? Did you have to go limp?
Yeah, get dragged around. I mean, you know, some of the women used to get manhandled really quite badly, but I mean, we were lucky. It was a mass protest. All they just wanted was just stick us in the van and get rid of us, basically. And actually, that's another interesting thing, because my day job, and I'm not acting, is tour guiding. And someone I know from tour guiding, she and her husband were police, and they were on duty at Greenham. And I said, "God, you must have hated us." And she said, "No, we bloody loved you. The amount of overtime we got, we bought a house." Which is really interesting to look at it from the other side.
Wow. Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
So going back to being arrested.
Yeah.
So could you just talk a little bit about that, what that was like for your experience?
Yeah, it was really strange. I mean, because there's so many of us getting dragged off, it didn't feel as scary as it would have done. If there'd just been one or two of us, it would be, oh, shit. But it was still quite alarming. But I just remember being dragged off, put in the van, sitting in the van with a lot of people who'd done it several times before. So, you know, I was with my friend Christine, and I think it was only me and Christine together, and the other two were in a different van. And we got taken to the police station and processed. And then the thing is, after that, you have to decide what you're going to do, because you get a court date. Are you going to pay the fine, or are you going to go to prison? And Christine and I decided we were going to go to prison. The other two decided to pay the fine.
Okay. Okay.
So going to court, it was like, you know, I arranged everything with my ex to, you know, he was happy to look after kids. We were pretty sure we'd get a week because that was the sort of standard amount. So it's all kind of, you know, you have to plan for these things. So we both wrote impassioned speeches about why nuclear weapons should not be on our soil, why we did what we did. And the magistrate, it was a woman, and she clearly had just had to do this so many times. And she's like, oh, I'm really sorry, you're going to have to go to prison for a week. That's just whatever. So then suddenly it's like, oh, shit, that's interesting. And we spent the first 24 hours in a cell in the police station. I think it was Newbury. I was in one and Christine was next door. And they take everything away from you, like, you know, everything out of your shoes and your belts and whatever. But still, Green and Woman have managed to write on the walls. You know, we could bang on the wall and hear each other just about. And then we were taken, I think at the end of that day, I don't think we spent the night there, we were taken to Holloway. And that was, holy shit. I mean, that was just awful. I mean, in so many ways. I mean, we were both a bit worried that the other woman in there would think we were idiots putting ourselves in there on purpose, even though it was only going to be for a few days, because they would have to let us out on the Friday, because otherwise it'd be over a weekend and we'd be going, you know. So we knew we weren't going to be in there for very long, but it's just dreadful. What the woman in there, who'd never, ever, ever have been in prison. You know, I mean, the first day we were in this sort of holding cell with six people altogether. And one of them was a woman called Christine. I'll never forget that woman, because she was in there for cheque card fraud. Her husband's business had gone bankrupt and she'd done several thousand pounds of cheque card fraud because she was desperate and fucked up and depressed and she had kids. And she was just a really lovely person who should never, ever, ever have been in that situation. I remember coming out and there was an article about her in The Sun calling her evil and... You know, and there were scary people in there too, people who would normally be scary, but they weren't, because they would go, oh man, you're Green and Woman, welcome, that's so cool. Really, I mean, really nice.
So really welcoming.
Really welcoming, totally getting it, you know, totally, totally getting it. And there was one, I had a really strange time, so there's one woman there who was in for GBH. And she had, half her hair had been sort of ripped out, and she'd, you know, she was quite the sort of person that I would be really genuinely scared of if I met them in the street. And she was bloody lovely. But she said to me, she said, oh, do you smoke dope? And I said, oh, I used to. And she went, here you are, and gave me a little bit of dope. And I'm like, oh my God, I've got drugs in a prison. I'm never going to get out of here. And I put it under my pillow. And I said, fuck, what do I do with that? And then nothing happened for like ages. So I ate it to get rid of it. So I was completely off my base. And then she said, have you still got it? I went, oh no, I ate it. She's like this, and she rolled a joint, and I was kind of scareder of her than I was of smoking a joint in prison. And we were looking out the window smoking dope. And then look, there were lots of Green and Woman would go outside the prison, they do things like let off balloons. So there were all these helium balloons going off. It was all very odd. I was completely stoned out of my head watching these helium balloons with this very scary woman.
Were releasing balloons. Kind of,
yeah,
so
they'd go outside
the prison.
You could see them, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because they knew there were lots of us in there, I guess.
Oh.
But so that was lovely. But, I mean, the whole process, when you get it, it's so dehumanising, obviously, when they take... Just so dehumanising. And they would... I've heard it's a lot better in Holloway now. Better, in inverted commas. But they would always take you for processing near, I think it was Sea Wing, where the really scary people were kept. So you'd hear people banging on the doors and screaming. And, you know, the doors are that thick and they're bulging. And just the whole thing was just designed to intimidate you and really fuck you up before you even got anywhere.
Yeah.
So the first day was in that cell with six, and then that evening we got our sort of cell for the rest of the week, and I was with two other women, and I was on the top bunk, and there's one over there, and the woman on the bunk underneath me, she'd just had surgery for her kidneys, and, you know, quite elderly, I thought at the time, black woman, and in the middle of the night she got really, really, really ill, and I was banging on the door trying to get someone. I thought she was going to die, and the other woman saying, oh, they're not going to come, you know, there's no point. They don't give a shit. So I just kept on banging on this bloody door, and eventually someone did come, and she was taken away, and she's really ill. And it's just, you know, it's all these things. What, you know, why is she in there? You know, nobody in there apart from scary woman with her half her hair missing had done anything violent. It's, yeah, a lot of it is desperation, and yeah, it's just, I'm so glad I did it, because it gave me a real insight into what women go through in there. But I'll tell you what, getting out was amazing. As high as a kite when we got out.
Yeah. Not literally. Yeah.
No. That was just on that one day.
Friday, yeah, that's
what it was. Yeah, and I remember doing cartwheels down Holloway Road, and they didn't let me and Christine out at the same time, which was a shame, because I was standing outside the gate thinking, I wonder if she's coming out today, and I just didn't know, and I waited for a while, and I just literally did cartwheels down the road. Mm. It's so amazing to be out, and then every time I go past that building, it's just like, oh god, you should never be anybody in there. It's just wrong. Mm. Really wrong.
So because, you know, you said it was so amazing to get out, because I'm just now thinking about the women who kind of kept going back.
Yeah. And, oh, God, yeah.
You know, in and out kind of thing. I'm so sorry.
I'm so brave. I doubt it's important. Let's just check. Yeah, so brave.
Yeah.
That's okay. Some guy's looking for an older woman to be in his paid videos. I'll get back to him later.
Is it okay to put it on silent?
Sorry?
Is it okay to put it on silent?
Oh, no, it's fine. Just no, it's fine. Yeah. It's just a contact thank through you. Facebook.
I can't remember what I was going to say now. I was just thinking about, the women who are going kind of back and forth.
Well, and also it makes me think of the suffragettes, who went through far worse than anyone from Greenham ever did. I mean, being force-fed and, you know, but it's part of that tradition and just the courage of those women to just keep going back and back and back. And the, you know, the passion, the commitment to doing it, you know, to living there, to all the inconvenience and cold and wet and damp. But then the sisterhood, and that sounds a bit hackney, but the sisterhood and that kind of thing of women together doing something. And then amazing things would happen. Like we were at, I think we were at a different gate when this happened, but Peggy Seeger pitched up, you know, the folk singer, and she went to every gate. And she'd written a song about Greenham called Carry Greenham Home.
Yeah.
And she came and sang it to us and taught it to us. Oh, so, yeah, Peggy Seeger came. Song. It was amazing, yeah.
I love Peggy Seeger.
Oh, and to be there when she came and to meet her and to have her teach us her song, and it's just amazing.
So what gate were you at then?
Blue, mostly.
Blue.
Yeah.
So that was your kind of...
That was our kind of where we would go, because we knew some of the women there, and it was,
What was the feeling at Blue Gate? If it had a personality, what would that be?
It felt a lot more welcoming than some of the others. I mean, we kind of tried different ones, you know, we'd go to different ones sometimes. And Blue, it's just the one where we felt more at home, I think. Mm. It just felt welcoming. I think it was Yellow Gate that we felt a bit kind of like, well, you're just like day trippers. Yeah. And there was a bit of that, actually, because the woman who lived there were a bit, oh, what the fuck are you doing here? You know, we live here. And of course, if you went and stayed the night, either you were in your sleeping bag or you were in one of their tents or benders or whatever, and they were, you know, they'd have to be wanting to welcome you in. And I think it was Yellowgate where we felt a bit like, you know, we weren't proper Green and Woman because we didn't live there.
Mm.
But I mean, that's fair enough because they're making massive sacrifices and whatever, you know. But yeah, we just felt more at home at Blue. It was amazing to see, and that's the one where they still got the gate there. When we went back.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I'll show you some pictures of it. But, and so they've still got, like, they've got the posts and the gate, and there's people written on it in blue. And it's,
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was really nice to see.
So when did you go back, sorry?
Last year.
It was last year.
Yeah, I think August, September time.
How does it compare to what it was like back then?
Oh, my God, you would never recognise it. I mean, just to see, I mean, yeah, this land that was militarised, that had guys in khaki with guns patrolling the fence, and we knew there were nuclear missiles in there, and now it's just this beautiful, open, common land, you know, and there were people walking their dogs and just, you know, just hummocks of heather or whatever. I don't know, it's just beautiful. And you could see the silos off on the right-hand side, and whereas they would have had weapons, they've got some of the car storage showrooms, apparently, for, like, local car dealerships. It's like, yeah, you know, it's amazing. It felt really, really lovely. And there were cows. And it's like, yeah, we did it, you know.
Yeah.
We did it. And I know people say, oh, they were going to take them away anyway. Well, I don't think they were. I think if there hadn't been so much protest, and particularly the woman who lived there all the time, you know, the determination, it was just more hassle than it was worth. I don't think they would have got rid of them anyway, but certainly not as soon. So I think the police camp had a massive impact. I think it had a massive impact on our understanding of the fact that as women, we can do stuff like that. Hi, Mark.
Hello there.
It's Alice.
Hi.
Mark. Yeah, yeah, I think we all gained a real understanding that as women we have a strength and we can do stuff. And I started going doing things like, I remember there was an arms dealers conference. Anyone be an arms dealer on Piccadilly,
right,
and
okay.
Loads of us went, and we stood on the other side of the road, and there were these wealthy men going in there, and we just standing there singing. I remember at one time like running into the road like a banshee and just shrieking and yeah. Oh God, just feeling so angry. How dare you? How fucking dare you? You know, you know, our country's the second biggest arms dealer in the world now. I just don't get it in any way, shape or form. And it does, you know, there is an anger there too. I mean, at Greenham, that anger was very much channeled into doing and being creative. But I remember one day walking along by the fence through the woods. It was beautiful. It was a really lovely little woodland walk. And you could see the fence, and this kind of warplane went overhead. And I just fell on my knees and I was just screaming. Because why? You know?
Yeah.
It is just a nonsense, the whole thing. Yeah. Really, the whole thing. But there we go.
You said that was channeled into creativity at Greenham as well.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of the actions, as you said, you know, dressing up and the kind of irony of the situation was definitely used as well.
Yeah.
But yeah. Being from like a theatre background, why do you think that something like Greenham kind of encourage so much creativity?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think it's partly the women who were there, some of them were from creative backgrounds. And one of the women that we used to travel down with quite often was a writer. And I assume there were probably women who were actors and artists and whatever there as well. That is actually really good. I think there's something happens when you get a group of women together for a political end that's important to them. Because if you look at the creativity in the placards of the anti-Trump protests, you know,
yeah.
I'm like, hear these pussies roar! You know, I mean, all that stuff comes out. And when one or two people start it, it encourages other people to do it and it spreads. And I just think creativity is a really powerful force. I mean, if you go and see an amazing play or an incredible film, it can change the way you think about the world. If you see an amazing picture, you read a book that moves you in some way, all that stuff can help change the world. And I think, this is probably bollocks, but I just kind of tend to think that women are more likely to be influenced like that because we have a more, oh, I don't know, it's not right. I was going to say open. That's not right at all. Because I know some women who are completely closed and channeled. But I think we do tend to respond more on an emotional level that is not cut off from the intellectual understanding. I think sometimes I really hate this generalisation. It isn't right to generalise. But I do think there's something in this that on the whole, men, they have an intellectual level and their emotions are not necessarily connected. Well, I think ours are more connected. And I have no idea if that's bollocks or not. Don't know. But it feels like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like that.
And it felt like that then.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah.
Because so much of what we did was creative.
Mm.
You know, I mean, The Witches was my biggest one, but I just thought that was fabulous. Again, like, who has these ideas? We never knew who had the idea for doing these things. Like, someone had the idea, so we all did it.
Yeah.
You know, in the dying, someone managed to get tickets and we went in and did that. And again, even though that, you know, that's been done before, it was still a creative thing to do. The woman who went in and did Teddy Bear's Picnic on top of the bunker, you know, I mean, that was fabulous. So it's like, you know, daring to do something a bit different, daring to use creativity to make a point, and also because it's nurturing for you. Because if you're doing an action that has a creativity inherent in it, it's, you know, you enjoy it as well.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know, you might have the fear of getting arrested or something or whatever, but you have more courage because it's creative and it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, and singing to the soldiers and being a witch and bouncing up and down on the fence was fun.
Yeah.
It was brilliant fun. It was wonderful.
And it just strikes me as kind of the opposite of destroying, you know, is creativity.
Yeah.
So it's that.
Yeah, it's making.
Yeah, making something out of this you know, horrible thing that's come and invaded that land of yours, and you're going...
So you're combating something that's really... Oh, sorry, darling. Something that's really kind of like that by going...
Yeah.
You know, like going round by creating something that combats it in a non-confrontational way, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I was wondering what it feels like today to talk about your experiences at Greenham.
It's lovely, actually, because a lot of people don't know about it, and I think people should know about it. Because it's part of the women's movement, it's part of the peace movement, and it's part of our history, actually, and it's not necessarily known. I'm always quite shocked when people have never heard of it at all, because I sort of assume that people do know about it, but clearly they don't. And it was something that I really learned a lot about me and what I'm prepared to do. You know, would I go to prison again for something I care passionately about? Yeah, probably would. I don't know what that would be quite. Brexit springs to mind. Well, that's not going there.
Half the population. Just
lock us all up, you bastards. Yeah. About how far you're prepared to go, and about using creativity to make change in the world. I think that's important. And it's just nice to talk to a young woman about it. You weren't around then. And it's it's passing on that heritage. When my daughter is a campaigner at Amnesty International.
Oh, okay.
And I'm so proud of the fact that she's gone down this route and she cares passionately about all the things that I passionately care about. So it's also like, going down the generations. Mm. And it's just nice to remember. They're really nice memories for me. They're really nice memories. I mean, obviously being in prison wasn't the best memory in the world, but I'm really pleased that I did it. Mm. And I kind of think that when you're 14, you should get bunged up in there for a day and the crime would drop. Because you realise if you do that, you're going to end up living like that. Like, oh my God, no, I'm not going to do that. Mm. I don't know.
I was going to ask you a question because we've got one question that we're supposed to be asking everyone just to get that kind of nice uniformity. But you've kind of answered it because could you explain why you think it's important that Greenham is remembered by subsequent generations?
Yeah, because it gives us the power to know that we can change things and that you don't have to just confront violence with violence. You can confront the threat of violence with creativity and passion and love. Mm. I felt so much love for those other women I was doing these things with. And when Peggy Seeger came, it was amazing the love she was giving to us.
Yeah.
And, love through music. Love through dressing up as a bunch of witches and doing daft things like bouncing on a fence. I think that's the legacy, is that you can confront evil, because I do seriously believe that nuclear weapons are evil, with love. Yeah. And that sounds a bit trite, but that's fine. That's kind of how it is.
Yeah. It's nice. It's good. We've talked about so much, and I feel like you could talk about Greenham obviously for hours and days and days and years probably, but is there a kind of defining moment for you or a best memory that you have of being there?
I think the best one was definitely the witches.
Yeah, that's sticking in my mind.
It totally sticks in my mind because it was just hilarious and really good. Yeah. I mean, just seeing these poor little lads with their guns just be like, oh, what do we do?
Was there a part of you, though, that thought, okay, I could maybe get shot? Or was the whole thing just...
I mean, it is weird seeing people with guns. I mean, when we see policemen with guns in the central London, I find it really bloody weird. It's supposed to make us feel safe. It doesn't make me feel safe. Mm. And certainly the sight of all these young guys with weapons who might just have thought that we were going to, run in and do what? Go woo at them.
Yeah. I've just got this brilliant
sing
image.
At them.
Yeah, you all just hiding in the woods. Yeah. That would be scary enough for me. I think that's hilarious.
I kind of think it's important that we did witches, because witches were women who were persecuted for being herbalists and midwives and whatever. Yeah. So making it about witches was also... who are the witches, where do they come from, maybe your great-great-grandmother was one.
Mm.
It's kind of important also.
Because obviously, I'm just saying hello to your cats. When you'd kind of go back and forth, what were the conversations like when you were having conversations with people who, didn't hadn't seen Greenham for themselves and they were just, you know, maybe reading the news or seeing the news about Greenham, like, were there any conversations you had with people that were of interest?
I can't think of anything in particular, because I mean, everyone I just knew was just really incredibly supportive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there was nobody, because I, you know, I was living in this little bubble of working in a women's centre and a community centre in an area where, I mean, it'd be like doing it in Walthamstow today. I mean, just pretty much like, you know, 90% of the population would be totally on your side. So I was living in my little activist bubble, I suppose.
Sure. So you're almost in a kind of Greenham bubble even when you were not in Greenham.
Yeah, because everyone just was behind it.
Yeah.
And, you know, some, I'm just trying to think, I can't think of any particular conversations.
I just, yeah, I mean, rather than conversations, I just wondered if there was kind of a feeling when you left, or, you know, you've kind of answered it, that you were still kind of living, almost living in Greenham still.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And even after I stopped going, because I mean, that, you know, just my marriage broke up and I had to, like, you know, earn a living and look after children and couldn't really do it anymore. Mm. But it was still very much sort of in my heart and in my mind, and that didn't stop.
Yeah.
And I don't think it does. When you've been involved in something like that, you know, like people who were at Woodstock or, you know, whatever, it's sort of, it's part of you.
Yeah.
I was at the first ever Glastonbury. That's part of me.
Why
as well.
Are you?
Completely nothing to do with protest, but I mean, it's still like, it was a big thing for me.
Major?
Yeah, I was 16.
That must have been amazing.
Helped build the first pyramid stage.
What?
But so things that you do like that are important, that stay with you, they are just part of you. And
did you know when you first went that it would be such a big part of you?
No, not a clue. And when we went down to the Embrace the Base, we were going down for a day.
Oh, wow.
That's what we were doing. But then when you do that and you have that amazing experience, it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, we need to go back here. Yeah.
Did you meet many people that were that you saw changes in, I don't know, at Greenham, or was there anyone there that you remember meeting there?
I remember meeting a woman who was in her 70s, or I don't know how old she was, but she was really elderly, on the Embrace the Base Day, and chatting to her and being so amazingly impressed that somebody who was clearly elderly had bothered to be there and cared. And I don't remember what we talked about, but I kind of really remember talking to her and just thinking, that's brilliant, that's amazing. Mm. Well, nothing I can particularly think of.
It always strikes me as amazing, all these women who maybe never would have met, you know, together for a common goal. I just think that's...
And all sorts of women, gay, straight, you know, old, young, with kids, without kids, I don't know, people involved in activism, people not normally involved in activism, just, yeah, it was a wonderful kind of melting point of people, of women. It was lovely.
I wanted to ask you about revisiting Greenham a little bit more, because you mentioned that there was a peace garden that's there now.
Yeah, it's really lovely. I mean, we kind of knew there was one, but we had no clue where it was. It's quite interesting trying to find it. But it's really beautiful because they've got... It's lovely because there's, like, little groves of trees and there's some information about the peace camp and on the way in. And,
there is...
There's an information board on the way in.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. Talking about it a bit. But the thing that... I think my favourite thing was the spiral with You Can't Kill the Spirit. Because that really was the Greenham song, You Can't Kill the Spirit. She's like a mountain, old and strong. She goes on and on and on. I don't know if you guys have got a copy of the Greenham songbook.
We've been researching, and we spent a day in Women's Library. And there are a lot of really great archives there, like songbooks, photos, diaries. Really cool. And then we watched the film together as well, Carrie Greenham Home, and there's a lot of songs. That song's,
yeah, but it was just so nice to go back and just to see, you know, that someone valued what we'd done enough to build this beautiful garden, and it was right there, not far from the place where we were.
Yeah. How does it compare now with back then? I guess how Greenham was seen. Are we aware of that?
Well, it's just a lovely place where people walk their dogs now, and it's just a lovely place you can take your kids to play, and you know, and there's no. no weapons. It's just a beautiful area of common land. And there's a cafe, I think, in the around there, which we didn't actually get to. We wish we'd allowed a bit more time.
But you're with people who you were at Greenham with?
Yeah. 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 My friend Christine and Mary, who... I think when we were going to Greenham, Mary was in her late 50s, which I thought was really old then.
Yeah.
Really, now it's like, hey, that's quite young. And now she is, she's really getting on now. So she doesn't walk very fast. So it's lovely that she came back. And another woman who I didn't know as well, but we used to travel with sometimes. And it was just so nice to be there. And to see the remains of Bluegate. And I remember we were standing there, and I said, what happened? So when we were arrested, and they came, oh, that was what it was. Yeah, and just like going through it all in our heads. And we had a picnic. It was lovely.
Picnic?
Yeah.
Not dressed up as
witches, no.
Normal picnic. Non-protest picnic. It's nice to... I think revisit things in your mind as well, but physically it's...
Yeah, it was so nice. And we said we'll go again, actually, when we want to get back again, because it was just a really, really nice experience. So we might get back this year.
Yeah. Cool. I had something in my mind that I was going to ask you then. I completely forgotten what it was.
Well, if you think of anything else, just phone me or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to ask you, did you have any kind of... experiences with the media at the time when you were at Greenham?
not directly. I mean, there was a picture in The Guardian of some of us cutting down the fence when we were witches, but I don't think I even realised anyone was taking pictures.
Yeah.
No. Actually, that's not quite true, because we did get in the local paper, the Paddington Times. There's the picture I've been searching for today and can't find, of the four of us with a banner saying Paddington Greenham Woman that someone made for us. Mm. And there was a little article about us in the Paddington Times, which was nice. Mm.
So what was the Paddington Greenham Woman?
It was just a group, well, we were, the area we lived in was technically called North Paddington, but you'd probably think it was Maida Vale, but not the posh end, the bit with the councillors' names.
Okay.
And we all happened to come from there, and some of us worked at North Paddington Women's Centre. So that was the connection.
So it was just kind of you representing that area.
And trying to encourage local women to come and be involved as well. Because it was I think if you doing things locally is really nice, because you can kind of build a local base for something.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that works well in Walthamstow. I mean, I'm thinking arts rather than politics now, but it's a very kind of local place. I run a Facebook group called Walthamstow Photography, and I've got over 300 members. It's all people who live locally. Mm. So we do photos together and stuff. So I think that works with activism too.
Yeah.
Building a local base.
How do you think, going back, that social media thing? Because obviously I'm thinking of Greenham, and I'm thinking of like the women's marches and how they were organised, all on like Facebook and things like that. And I'm kind of imagining being at a time where there are no phones. Yeah.
There were no mobile phones, there was no social media. So how the hell did 30,000 women end up going to Greenham that day? No idea.
Yeah, that's what I was...
I really don't know how that happened. Because it's amazing to think, I mean, for people who've grown up with mobile phones and social media, it must be such a weird idea that you can do anything in the world without it.
Yeah.
Because now it's just, it's how you do stuff. But I don't know how I did that.
No. It's just those large scale things that I find so deeply impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
To comprehend how that...
Yeah. Sort of networks of women's centres and, rape crisis centres and whatever. And everyone just phoning everybody else.
Yeah. So it's just...
But I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary. Actually, Christine might know.
Oh.
I think she was the one who kind of... I think Christine was the one who got the North Paddington Women's Group together. I'm not sure. I'll chat to her. She's in Norfolk at the minute, but I'll ask her.
Yeah.
And she might have some interesting stuff to say.
Yeah. It's just an amazing level of connection.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Mm. Mm. Yeah. And it just took, didn't it? It was like one of those things that the moment is right for that thing.
Mm.
And it just took.
Yeah.